Welcome to the T&D podcast brought to you by TomTom. We think you're trucking awesome. You deserve a trucking awesome app. That's why today we're excited to talk about the ultimate trucking companion, TomTom Go Navigation. With premium features designed to make every delivery a breeze, Go Navigation ensures you reach your destination efficiently and stress-free. Hello and welcome back to the Truck and Driver podcast. I'm Doogie Rankin and I'm joined today by...
Matt Hoyland.
Hey Matt, how are you doing? It's not been that long since I caught up with you. We're getting good at being regular on this podcast.
Yes, we are. I'm very good, thank you. Not much has changed. Still plugging away doing my King's Lynns and my Red Lodges and the occasional Snettertons. So not leaving much of East Anglia. I did do a day on Sugar Beet last Saturday because it was the last weekend of intake for the berry factory. So they were trying to get as much beet in as they possibly could because there'd kind of been a break in the weather. So they were asking for volunteers. So I went and did a day on Sugar Beet on the Saturday. And then the Sunday, the weather, it started pouring it down with rain again. So in East Anglia, we've got Wissington and Cantley left open. And I think Newark is, but I haven't been that way for ages, so I couldn't really tell you, to be honest. But I would say Newark's probably still running, but I wouldn't know personally.
Oh, yeah, it's been absolutely pouring down the rain in Scotland here today. I wonder how the rain's affecting agriculture overall, because it seems to have had a lot of... Well, I know it rains a lot in winter, but we seem to have had a lot of it.
Yeah, it's certainly affected the sugar beet, and I think there's still quite a lot of wheat knocking about. It's been pretty terrible, and the weather as well affects... If they're trying to load a boat in, say, King's Lynn Port, Ipswich Port, where, you know, the docks, wherever they are, if it's raining, they can't get the conveyors going to load the boats because it needs to be dry. So that would have been hampering things to a degree, I would have thought. I mean, it's been dry today. There was a little bit of rain for a few minutes this morning, but overall it's not been too bad. Although when I got home, the skies were certainly darkening over and it was looking a bit ominous. So I think it's probably me to blame, be fair, because I do keep thinking very soon I'll be able to ride my motorbike to work. So it is my fault for having that thought in my head occasionally, so I do apologise.
You're jinxing it for everybody.
Aye. Yeah, I am. Yeah, right. I do apologise.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's all been, it's been a pretty lively week in the world of the transport. Obviously, I had Ed Rogers on the podcast talking about the ludicrous fines that they'd been slapped with having the stowaways in the truck. And enormously frustrating when you consider that they're doing thousands of crossings and there's been like a couple of incidents, and the drivers are all highly trained. The trucks are secured to the best of their abilities, but these people are incredibly determined and they're skilled as well at getting into these vehicles. So now and again, you're going to get one that gets in there. It's impossible to completely stop it happening, and to be fair, they do a very good job of preventing it happening. So I would hope that, you know, they want to work with Border Force. They want to do the best possible job that they can. So I would hope that, like, Border Force and the authorities would kind of be more amenable to opening up, like, talk with hauliers and trying to assist them and working together as teams in a positive manner going forward. But whether or not that's going to happen. But can you imagine, as a driver, being fined £36,000 for basically doing your job?
Doing your job, yeah.
Yeah, that's just crazy. That could, it just shows you how out of sync with the rest of the planet the people are who are issuing these fines are. That very easily lose somebody their house. It could make them homeless. It could drive somebody to do something, you know, terrible with the effects on their mental health. So yeah, really shocking. That I'm going to try and look into that more, find out more about it, because the mainstream media, they only report on things now and again. They haven't reported on the farmer protests at all, really, and they were reporting on what was going on with stowaways trying to get into trucks a little while ago when it seemed to be particularly bad. I don't know if you were running much, because you've done a lot of continental running.
Yeah, and also I'd like to point out as well, which some people might not have even thought about, if you're brave enough to be an owner driver doing them sort of crossings, you'll get double the fines because you're the owner and you're the operator. And I know one person that has happened to, and because he didn't have his own check sheet, because it's his truck and he just checks it all, I don't know what the outcome was, but he ended up, I think he had four on board, and he got the fine for being the driver and being the operator and being complicit in it all. And it's just staggeringly unbelievable. But the problem is, who's that lad, Mo, whatever his name is.
Mo,
the tiny, you know, this tiny, tiny majority that, again, the mainstream media focus on, and they just think, oh, all drivers are on the fiddle, they're all up to it. And there's out there, there's going to be the odd one or two that will do it for money, and that ruins it for everybody. And the Border Force just aren't, they're not interested in communicating or changing anything, because it means that they're not going to get a nice steady stream of income coming in. But personally speak, I mean, I've had colleagues have trucks damaged, stuff being thrown at them, you know, locks being cut off, all sorts. I've only ever had four in the back. I was parked in Dunkirk because I was going to Belgium, and I chipped out, ran out of time, parked at the dunes, got up in the morning, and I didn't even bother checking the trailer because I knew I was going to Belgium. This is 2009. And when I got going, they obviously realised that I wasn't heading directly into the ports. So they started making an almighty noise. And I was determined to get them as far away as I could. And they actually managed to get a, not prize the doors open, but get a gap in the back doors of my trailer and chuck a load of my straps out. So they were all dragging down the road. And as I was getting up in towards Belgium, there was a broken down truck. This was a Friday morning, because I wanted to be home for the Sunday, which is another story. And there was a broken down truck with a police car behind it. I went past it, and I didn't realise that they had chucked all this stuff out. I'd seen the odd car coming past flashing their lights. I was thinking, oh, I know they're in there. They must be doing something. And just before the French-Belgian border, I pulled in a lay-by there. And by the time I got to the back of the trailer, the police were there, and you could just hear them all banging and going ahead. And there was four of them in there. They'd ripped a large piece of the plastic off the lighting that I was carrying, and that they'd been flapping it out the doors. And I just picked up all my straps, the police took me away, and off I went. So I've been very lucky. Now, I also appreciate that it's much easier to secure a box trailer, although it's not completely infallible, because they will cut the roof, and that you know, that sort of thing has happened. So it's just a case of, I never used to park anywhere near the ports unless I was heading out of them. I would physically, you know, in the mornings, no matter where I was, I would get in, have a hunt about as best as I could just to check it all. Or another thing I used to do, I'd turn around and point in the opposite direction away from the ports, which would sort of deter them as well. So yeah, there's a few things you can try and do, but again, turning around and pointing the other way, that's all well and good, but it's costing extra money as well, because it's the time, the tolls, all that sort of thing. And if you're on a real shoestring budget, which quite a few people can be, that could potentially be the difference between profit and loss. So yeah, it's a real difficult situation.
Yeah, you've never told that story on the podcast before.
No?
About having them stuck in the back of the truck. There was quite the famous one that was videoed, where the guys had realised that the truck they were in was going to Holland or Belgium or something, and they were like waving, trying to get out, and he was like, no, you ain't getting out, you're going all the way to... I guess, but the risk you have with that as well, because when they get into the backs of these trailers as well, they will often cause a lot of damage.
Yes.
They'll get in about to see what there might be to steal. Of course, they'll just do their business all over the place as well and contaminate it.
Yeah, exactly. So if you've got foodstuffs on, you know, that's a load condemned. And again, I was very lucky that mine was lighting equipment, and it was really airy and spacious and blah, blah, blah. And obviously they could move about. They didn't do anything like that in there. And luckily for me, the damage was so minimal. When I got to Belgium and told the chap, who the production manager, it was actually for U2. I told him about it. He actually laughed. He felt, because I told him I got him some extra crew, and he found it quite funny, luckily. So, the damage, I mean, Trans Am, speaking for them as such, I know my mate Crooksy, he had his windscreen smashed. Someone else, I think, had stuff had his windscreen smashed as well, them trying to slow you down and whatnot. It was, at one point, it really was the Wild West trying to get through, and it was just a big major stress for everybody.
Yeah, there was that period where they seemed to be especially aggressive with trying to slow down trucks and damaging things. Yeah. The ludicrous thing was some of the stories you read online from the press, like the one about, you see the pictures of the E.M. Rogers Volvo with a smashed windscreen, and it says on the news report, the haulier claimed his lorry had been damaged. Is it? But
yeah.
What do you mean claimed, as in like in inverted commas? He's not claiming it did happen. And it just the people that are reporting and dealing with this and authorities, they need to go out and like experience this to see what it would be like. How would you like to go and drive to your work going along the motorway and run the gauntlet of somebody throwing something through your windscreen? The stuff that people have got to put up with here. But of course, we don't. It's hard to get a picture of what's going on unless you are at the sharp end with it.
And even after all of that as well, again, the mainstream media aren't interested. They don't care. As long as the stuff's still on the shelves. That's the biggest problem, is it? Until everybody refused to ship in or out and stuff really started to stop happening, it'd be like, nobody's doing it because it's far too dangerous. If the situation's sorted out, then maybe it can be resolved. But again, the French aren't that bothered about trying to stop them getting out.
The French couldn't care less, really. They're just...
But then with the English, if there's hordes of them at Dover trying to get across to Calais,
a different story.
Would the British be stopping them, you know? So,
but the thing is, do you think if it was the other way about, do you think the French would be letting 3,000 people come over in boats from Britain to France? Do you think they would just allow that to happen?
I would suspect they
might not. But that's just pure conjecture. But I do wonder, like Border Force, they're talking about one or two, you know, half a dozen people max in a lorry now and again, very occasionally, and they're dishing out these enormous fines for it when you've got thousands of people coming over on boats. Where's the fairness in that? Who's ultimately responsible for the boats? I wonder if that's taken away a little bit of what's been going on with the trucks so much, because it's easier to get across on a boat.
Yeah. How are they affording these boats? That's what's always mystified me.
Well, you do wonder.
There must be someone in Calais making a fortune in rubber dinghies.
Yeah. It comes down to that there was a thing, there was an advert on Twitter, like a charity looking to help refugees who were like stranded at Calais. And it's like, well, refugees is one thing if it's families of women and children who've been displaced from an ongoing conflict like that. And we have had humanitarian disasters in recent times, places like Syria, where a lot of people were displaced. But then it comes down to, it seems to be just young, fit, military-age men with smartphones and so on that are all congregating there. And it's the same at the American border. It's the same at a lot of places. And it's like, these people aren't refugees or something altogether more worrying and sinister.
Economic migrants, so.
Yeah, because, you know, developed countries do need to do their bit to help refugees who are coming from war-torn countries, often where the Western country may have had an influence in what is going on there. It's an enormously complicated issue. And yes, there are humanitarian reasons, but this isn't right. This is, you know, it's alarming, and it's there seems to be... it's quite curious that the Conservative government have just kind of allowed it to happen and just kind of shrugged their shoulders with it, which they have done with a lot of things, really, without wanting to get in and get political. But I don't really see anything changing for the transport industry in general if Labour get in over the Conservatives. It's two cheeks of the same arse, really.
Oh, definitely. And it's, and again, nobody cares. And
yeah, well, these people have got, nobody knows who they are in a lot of cases, and these people are the ones that can end up being exploited and trafficked. So there's a whole other like a big dark side to all this that's going on. And unfortunately, you've got the poor, in these cases, you've got the poor lorry driver stuck in the middle of it, just trying to do his job, while there's criminal gangs importing people through any means that they can manage. So
yeah,
Ed Rogers has done a great job kind of getting out into the press and talking about things. And I'm trying to dig out my contacts from, because I spoke to a variety of media people during lockdown, when truck drivers for a very short period were actually being sort of appreciated, because they were the ones that were still out there keeping the shelves full while so many other people were able to stay at home. And that's been very quickly forgotten.
Oh, yes. We need another lockdown. That's what we need.
Yeah.
Clear the roads as well. I'll be well up for that.
Well, it was kind of nice for lorry drivers for a while, but don't give anybody any ideas of another lockdown, because I could see that coming in the future as well. But for whatever reason, I wouldn't surprise me if they tried to implement climate lockdowns as we push towards these net zero targets for things. But that's kind of another story. But I would like to see if I'm looking through. Well, I'm back to being editor of the magazine full time for the next few weeks as well, because Andy Stewart is off. Yeah, I'm trying to dig out those contacts that I had in 2020, because I had the people from the BBC, people from a couple of the tabloids like The Sun, which a lot of people aren't a fan of. I'm not particularly either, with their track record. No. And even like Al Jazeera, who are actually very good. So to try and get some of these issues being talked about in the mainstream, see if we can get the ear of some politicians, because with it being an election year, you would think that you would be able to get the ear of some people, because transport's, it's a vital part of the economy. And as I'm going to get on to something else, there's another problem facing us as well, as one of many, which is the thieving that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
We need to get some of these issues into the mainstream press. It's all very well like us shouting and amongst ourselves, but we're preaching to the choir when you're talking in transport to other people. We kind of need to get it. And I found it surprising that the Daily Mail was so dismissive and had that kind of nasty kind of tone to their story about Rogers, because the Daily Mail was pro-Brexit. And this is a British company running back and forth into Europe successfully in a post-Brexit era. Therefore, from the Daily Mail's point of view, that would be validation that, you know, Brexit was fine, it's not affected things. But
The Daily Mail doesn't like foreigners.
Yeah. So I was quite surprised at that the media wouldn't sort of back haulage companies more. But we saw it in Canada. Well, all the mainstream media in Canada is bought and paid for by the state, and all of them were saying that the truckers were Nazis and all this kind of nasty stuff. But I'd be kind of hoping, you know, truck drivers, it's the backbone of the country, the stereotypical working class grafting men and women. And you'd think some of the media would pick up on this and be supportive of it. I wonder if maybe it would be good if they get some sort of tabloid interest in some of this, because that's like ultimately that these are the sort of salt of the earth truck drivers, and what it is they're doing. They're being grossly, it's pretty gross what's going on, some of it.
Oh, yeah.
At the moment.
Well, being as it's an election year and we need to get the attention of the media, what we need, as Martin Penwald found out, we need a big convoy. That's what we need.
Yeah. The thing is, with having a convoy these days, with things, with operator licensing and all that kind of stuff,
you get shut down.
You would just get, that's the thing now. Because truck drivers, they've got things that you can take away. It's easy for the people to go and protest about, also, you could, like, the Just Stop Oil, the climate protesters are, like, politically correct. People protesting about wars, people protesting about gender and all that. These people don't have anything tangible that can be taxed or removed from them. So they can just go about and go and smash things up and do whatever they want. With trucks, I would say, like, maybe 25 years ago, you could go and get a couple of hundred trucks probably and go and make a peaceful protest and drive them down the M25 into the middle of London. I would imagine if you tried to do anything close to that now to cause some disruption, they would be down on you like an absolute ton of bricks.
Oh, yes.
We've seen how effective the farmers have been in Europe, which hasn't been in the news. Some of the footage was hilarious with them setting up the roadblocks. Tractors just drove around the side of them because they've got tractors.
Yeah.
I do wonder if it came down to actually getting like a large amount of vehicles together for a protest. I would imagine that the police would be very, very heavy-handed on that because there's so much sort of laws in place against all that kind of thing now. But you're right, it's something needs to be done to bring this to the attention of people in authority who can make a difference, and they'll only do things for themselves if they think it can benefit them. So it's like, how can it be made to benefit these people?
Benefit me.
Let's say the biggest news coming out of like government over the past couple of weeks was they were spending a few hundred thousand pounds in a few different places to expand truck stops. Like a few motos and things were getting extended, which is nice. I've got a press release actually, which came in today. There's a news story about some of that, but it's a spit in the ocean, isn't it? But yeah, yes. I've got three press releases here for you. This one's quite a random one. Midland Pallet Trucks welcomes investment in HGV driver facilities. Midland Pallet Trucks applauds the Department for Transport's announcement of £16.5 million joint investment with industry to improve roadside facilities for HGV drivers across England. Yeah, well, that's great. Thank you, Midland Pallet Trucks. I'm glad to know that you think that. Yeah, a curious press release from their PR company. Yeah, we all agree with that. It's quite a good thing, really. But it goes on. It's quite funny. I do like this press release because it's the first paragraph, ultimately benefiting the UK economy. Midland Pallet Trucks highlights the importance of investment within companies themselves to ensure a smooth-running supply chain. Investing in high-quality manual handling equipment like quality hand pallet trucks and manual stacker trucks can significantly improve efficiency and safety throughout the logistics chain. So it's gone straight into an advert for Midland Pallet Trucks. I just love that press release. I'm like, what's anybody really supposed to do with this? It just ends up as an advert for them. But it's worked because I'm reading it out on the UK's number one truck driver podcast.
There's no such thing as bad publicity.
For more information on Midland Pallet Trucks, visit midlandpallettrucks.com. Find out what
other pallet trucks are available.
In other news, Midland Pallet Trucks, what else? We have to check on their website and see what other things are in agreement. But yeah, that was one.
Go down a Midland Pallet Truck wormhole here.
Yeah, absolutely. I wonder if we've got any lorries we could feature them in the magazine.
They might do. Yeah. Maybe they've got a classic ERF or something tucked
away. That'd be nice. Yeah, that'd be good. Yeah, it's another press release that popped in today. Renault Trucks 2023 business results, deliveries up 18%. So Renault have been doing well.
Yeah.
They sold a total of 69,859 trucks at the end of 2023. And then Renault are obsessed with electric trucks, by the way. Renault Trucks asserts itself as a leader in decarbonised mobility. With a 22.4% market share of electric vehicles over 16 tonnes in Europe. So yeah, Renault are really heavy in electrics, but
decarbonized mobility just sounds like a terrible tagline. It sounds like someone's cleaned out a wheelchair or something. It just doesn't sound anything like it should be to do with trucks.
It's one of the catchphrases that sort of give European truck executives and all these well-to-do people like to throw about when you go to press events about how we're going to see enormous changes to the world of transport, where people are going to be using electric vehicles. And is it, an electric truck's £350,000. Folk are running on profit margins of
four-ton heavier.
Less than 2%. We don't have anywhere near enough safe truck parking. How the hell are you going to be able to charge these things on the road? What are they going to be worth after 5 years? Blah, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And nobody's going to answer these questions, but Renault, they sold, that's electrics, they sold 624 medium and heavy duty electrics.
I mean, I've mentioned it before, I'm sure, on the podcast, but that Renaults have a real big presence around East Anglia. Mm. I mean, we've got Roy Humphreys' dealership, although he is a private dealer and will sells Ivecos, Renaults, so on and so forth. But the vast majority of trucks I see day to day, sort of running up and down towards King's Lynn, are Renaults and DAFs.
Mm.
They really seem to have the market share around here. That's just an observation, not on actual statistics, I will add.
Yeah, it's curious. You do get certain parts of the country where you get like concentrations of certain kinds of truck. Like down in Cornwall, you had Panel Commercials for many years, who were a Seddon Atkinson dealer. And while Seddon Atkinsons were... nobody had them in certain parts of the country. There was a lot of them running about there, but like even to getting towards the end of Seddon Atkinson production, and you get certain places now, like up near AM Phillip and Forfar, they're an Iveco dealer, so you do see a lot of them knocking about there, which is always interesting. It comes down to how good the trucks are so largely similar these days in a lot of ways, that it often comes down to the dealer backup that you get.
Yeah.
One interesting thing, here it is in this Renault press release, which they mentioned, producing new vehicles is no longer the only option, because we've talked a little bit in the podcast about used vehicles and the potential avenue that they could be for people as they look to reduce costs. But of course, you've got to be careful with a used Euro 6, because unlike previous vehicles, you could get a massive bill for some of the emissions equipment on it. But Renault seem to be quite... committed to reselling and refurbishing trucks to get some extra lifespan off them. This is proper sustainability. This Renault has been stepping up circular economy initiatives in reducing the environmental impact of trucks while providing hauliers with economical and sustainable solutions by extending the life of parts and trucks. Renault trucks can reduce the impact of natural resources by up to 80%, they reckon. Regenerate, repurpose and return. So Renault in 2023 at their factory, this is in France, repurposed 95 used vehicles. Now that's like a small number, but that is partly down to, they say, the lack of availability of used vehicles with stock levels still very low. So that must be a kickback to the sort of COVID era, where trucks aren't coming back in off like the big fleets. But that was 95 trucks which were like fully restored, sort of Euro 6 ones, like back to sort of as good as new, and extended the life of 250 trucks in customers' fleets by reconditioning them at its used truck centre in Lyon. They're quite busy and committed to that. And we've seen that in the UK with Renault used trucks, where they've taken like a lot of plain white tractor units, which nobody likes or cares about particularly much, and they've done them up and made them a lot tidier. So it's good to see a manufacturer making some sort of official efforts to go and make used vehicles better, because you've got to come up with a plan really to deal with a lot of these fleet trucks that come in, because Scania is going to have absolute rakes of R450s coming in from places, and there's not a massive second-hand market for plain white ones. But if you were to go and do them up a bit, tidy them up, then potentially it's got to be a way forward for some hauliers going forward as they seek to reduce costs overall, perhaps.
Yeah, and I don't know how much the export market to the Far East and Africa and whatnot affects the numbers for that sort of stock, because if that market's pretty strong, then they're not going to have the numbers to refurbish, because they're all off to carry on happily chucking out their terrible emissions elsewhere in the world.
Well, I spoke to somebody a couple of weeks ago who said X Turner's trucks, they use all the DAFs.
Yep.
2000 and sort of 17, 18 plates are being cut up and broken down into spares and sent away to abroad to sort of Africa and Asia. That's a truck which is like 6 or 7 years old. It's not even Euro 6C. It's not even Euro 6. It's Euro 6C. So it's the next evolution of that. That's the facelift DAF with the tracks and gearbox, which is being... I mean, I've no doubt that some of those trucks will be welded back together again at the other side. It will be a sort of a way to get round exporting a whole vehicle to go and put it into bits. But even at that, you've got to think that it's not a sustainable model for the UK to only be keeping trucks for 7 or 8 years. You've got to think a truck should have a minimum 12-year lifespan. I think things should be reconditioned and repowered. You see it in America with a lot of trucks where guys are... I know that they take it to the extreme of things, but they've got old Peterbilts and Kenworths, which if the guy's like, I've had this truck 35 years and it's had 5 engines and all this.
Yeah, that triggers broom.
Yeah. But I think there's definitely we've got to be more sustainable in the way that we're treating used trucks going forward now that, you know, with the bulk of the sort of the Euro 5 stuff has been thrown on the scrap heap one way or the other going forward with Euro 6s. You've got to be more resourceful. Hopefully manufacturers would look into that, because keeping those trucks going for longer is better and cleaner than going and putting loads of new vehicles in the road and mucking about with electrics.
Yes, yeah, definitely.
Last press release for you. This is a stormer. Iveco and Ford Otosan have signed a memorandum of understanding to examine potential synergies. What that means is they're going to explore potential collaboration and development of a new cabin for heavy-duty commercial vehicles. So Iveco and Ford now.
Yep, that's going to be the Eurotech 2024, isn't it?
Yes.
I can see it now.
Well, of course, if you don't know, dear listeners, and I would imagine if you're listening to this, you probably do, that Iveco and Ford used to be in partnership building trucks, and a lot of the Ivecos that you would see in the UK would have a blue oval Ford badge on them in the era of the Iveco Eurostar and the Iveco Eurotech. They had Ford badges, and of course you had the Ford, the Euro Cargo had the... It was just the cargo back then. That had the Ford badges on it as well. So they have got history together, these two companies. Now, Ford, who make a heavy-duty truck, but they only make it for Europe. It's only left-hand drive, and it's only a 4x2. And they've obviously realised that to go forward as we move towards Euro 7, it's going to cost them too much to develop a new cab. And, of course... cabs can be longer now. We're seeing cabs being extended with the new Volvo Aero with the XXL cab. DAF were the first to do it with the XG, where you get the more interior space because there's not a length limit on the truck anymore. So Ford and Iveco.
The Eurostar, when it came out, that was, to my understanding, because I never actually had one, it was universally loved by drivers because it was huge. I can't remember. I'm sitting here trying to remember what year it came out. It was in the 90s at some point. But it was bigger than the Globetrotter, which would have been the F Series, I think. And the 3 Series Scania had the top line, which was about 6 inches bigger. And the Eurostar was huge. And they were pretty reliable trucks, really. I mean, the Eurotechs really kind of had a shelf life. They really suffered with rot.
Yeah, I remember, because Seddon Atkinson, which was Iveco took over, they used the cab, and it was called the Strato and the Strato Cruiser. And I went to see a...
No, that's the DAF cab.
They moved on to the... they still went and did
That's right, yeah, after the...
There were two generations
that's
on
right.
it. Yeah, and you still got...
The earlier DAF cab, which was also Pegaso as well.
Yeah.
And then that's right, yeah, then the later Sedatki had the Iveco.
Yeah, it was still right. called the Strato. The big one, equivalent to the Eurostar, was called the Strato Cruiser. And that you could get with a big Cummins in it. So I think for a while that, you could get that with the 525 Cummins in it.
I wonder if there's any of them left.
I don't know. There was a commercial motor or a trucking driver with one on the cover at one point. And of course, with the Iveco Eurostar, you got the big V8.
Yeah.
17 litres, 514 horsepower. The rot on them. I remember going to see a company in Cornwall who had some Sedan Atkinson tractor units, panel commercials, of course, and they were, the cabs were replaced under warranty because they were basically rusting when they were brand new.
Yeah.
Like the made of old washing machines or something like that.
Yeah, they weren't the best steel going, but because I mean, going back beyond that, I mean, the Iveco, the Turbostar, the V8, that had a hell of a reputation of power. And again, I am too young to have really driven one of them, but from what I'm told by the people who had, they were quite a machine. They were thirsty, but then big old engines from any manufacturer are going to be thirsty, especially if you're booting them to get up mountains.
Mm. Yes.
Quite a machine in its time.
Yeah, the Eurostar seems to be quite fondly remembered by people, certainly a lot more than, say, like an early Stralis, which nobody has any kind of fondness for, really, apart from maybe, well, I will say, if you got like a really, really, like a fresh and tidy one, it would be far, far better than what you think it might be. They were actually quite advanced at the time, the Stralis, but nobody is really. Conor Jennings loves them out in Ireland, and I've got a lot of time for them. But in general, you know, a Eurostar has got a lot more cred about it and a lot more interest about it. So I wonder, it costs an absolute fortune to develop a new cab, and the Iveco S-Way is still using the sort of Stralis construction underneath there. So for them to make a bigger cab, it makes sense for two truck manufacturers who are not otherwise engaged with other firms to go ahead and do something like that. Would it mean that cab would be built in right-hand drive form? So would that mean potentially that we would get right-hand drive Fords?
If they did, and 6x2s, from what I understand with the price and whatnot of the Ford F-Max as they are, I think they're very competitively priced, and they're very popular as well. So, because I think they only have one drivetrain as well, don't they?
Yeah, that's right. It's 500 horses, tracks and box, 4x2. So it keeps things
4x2, that's that.
It keeps things simple. Obviously, there would be more complications for them coming to the UK, but then again, it's just...
Yeah. But if they're kind of made as a fleet spec sort of motor, and they're going to be cheaper compared with your little smaller Actrosses, you know, your Renault T-Range or stuff like that, they could find a very big market, like the supermarkets and things like that.
Well, I think the Ford name itself has got Ford for many decades was the biggest selling car company in the UK by a mile, with the Escort, Fiesta, Sierra, Mondeo, what have you. And obviously the Transit was the backbone of Britain. Modern Transits are garbage these days with their engines. Some genius came up with the wet timing belt, where the timing belt is immersed in the engine oil, and of course when it starts doing DPF regens, it starts flooding loads of fuel in, and the fuel ends up going into the oil, which contaminates it, which ends up rotting the belt out. I know a guy who's got a recovery truck, and basically his entire business is based around picking up knackered Ford Transits because they break down all the time. I've seen quite a few companies going for the MAN van, which is one of the advantages of getting the MAN van is you can get it serviced through the truck dealer network, which tends to be open 24 hours.
Oh, that's quite handy.
But also having the truck manufacturer name on a van, I think it lends that van a certain level of prestige, perhaps. I think a lot of people like those MAN vans, and I think they would have taken quite a lot of sales from Ford potentially with them, although Ford don't tend to, you don't see as many big Transits on the road anymore. They're just so unreliable these days. But the Ford name and brand, I think, has got some, it's got some viability in the UK.
Yeah.
Watch this. After we've been saying for years and years and years that Iveco should bring out a tag axle right-hand drive tractor unit. The kind of people that would buy those trucks are the guys who've got some of the smartest and best fleets in the country, so they would be good halo vehicles. And Iveco already do a tag axle left-hand drive, which is, you'll wait for years and years and years and years. and then they'll end up doing a cab with Ford, and then Ford will launch a tag axle tractor unit in the UK before I heck whoever do. Watch this space.
A right-hand drive Ford F-Max 500 tag.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see it now. Yeah, color-coded wheels and whatnot. Yeah, I can visualize that in my head.
Yes, we don't know how long that will take. I mean, the R&D for designing cabs, maybe both companies, they probably already have some ideas and blueprints laid down for individual designs, so they're going to pull the resources together to go and come up with something which is it comes in line with this new legislation, so they can have a larger cab. I take it Iveco has had a look at the existing architecture for the S-Way and decided that it's possibly not worth their while trying to extend it or make it bigger, so they're going to go for something new. I'd heard somewhere that out of all the parts of a truck to like make, by far the most expensive thing is like the cab sort of structure, the cabin white as it's called. That is the most.
I suppose it's kind of one the biggest part, essentially, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's why DAF kept their cab going for so, so long in the XF.
Yeah.
Because it's such an expensive thing, and it was still kept, skillfully kept up to date until they were able to take advantage of the new length laws with things, so.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Truck and Driver podcast brought to you by TomTom. The TomTom Go navigation offers a specific set of truck features. You can set your cargo and truck dimensions for specific routes so you can drive confidently on suitable roads, making every journey efficient and reliable. Truck yeah. Yeah, so some interesting bits and pieces came out of that this week. Just to finish things off, I noticed that Phil from J.R. Dixon, a haulier up in Cumbria, he's very hands-on with his business. He actually goes out and drives his trucks, and he'd put some shocking pictures on Twitter yesterday. It was one of his trucks, a box trailer with padlock doors on it, parked on the A34, no options to get anywhere else, and padlock cut off the back, in about the trailer, rummaged about, stolen a load of things out of it. And this is at Silverstone on the A34, so it's not the back of Beyond by any stretch of the imagination. This is fairly major road network. So they called the police, and the police said, "We don't come out to things like that." And six vehicles had been done there. So you're talking, criminals will hear that and be made aware of it, and they will be emboldened and confident by that. The fact that if you want to go out and go and break into a lorry at night and empty it out, nobody's going to come looking for you. It's not even going to be looked into. And I would imagine that some good old-fashioned sort of police work, like getting in a car, driving about, knocking on doors, speaking to some undesirables and things, you would be able to go and solve some of these cases and find out where these things are going. But does it come down to, is have the police been cut back that much, they just don't have the numbers anymore? Or is it simply an unwillingness to get involved with any of this sort of stuff these days? I suspect it's possibly a bit of both.
I think it is a bit of both. And it's funny you should mention that, because when I was having a little look through my Facebook this morning, in my Facebook memories from 5 years ago, 2019, Paul Arthur and Transport from Attleborough, not far away, I know Paul, known him an awful long time. He had a truck, his driver found a trailer this morning after parking in Rugby overnight. I'm not sure where it was parked, but it wasn't a lay-by, I don't think. It was, I'm not quite sure exactly where, but 8 pallets stolen, and as you can see, most of the curtain cut away. I think from memory, talking to the chap who worked there at the time, I think they had £50,000 or £60,000 worth of stuff stolen. Again, they phoned the police, and the police just said, "Well, here's a crime number. No one's coming out. Basically, we're not interested." And you think, if that was somebody's house, or maybe an MP's house who got broken into and had 50 grand's worth of stuff stolen, they'd be all over it like a rash, wouldn't they? But a truck getting them broken into, I don't care. Not interested. Well, it's your fault. You shouldn't have parked there. Well, where am I going to park? Where Can you show me some secure parking?
Yeah, can you go and do something about this, please? Here's a recent reply. It's just popped up on the Twitter thread that Phil had put up with some pictures on it. It said, one of Wayne's Cat's trucks was done in the A34 down that way a couple of months back. A full load of palletized beef. Now, that's obviously going to be ending up in shops and restaurants somewhere in the country. And I just can't believe that there wouldn't be like detectives or officers out there who've that would have sort of some know-how, their ear to the ground, who would be able to find out where an enormous quantity of beef is being distributed. And it's just, this is organised crime. And it's, Phil's just said, it's only going to get worse, and it is, because they're not doing anything. They're really not doing anything about it. And I remember when I passed my driving test in 1997, and I had like an F-Reg Vauxhall Nova with a noisy exhaust on it, and knocking about, driving about the local area, there were police panda cars patrolling all the time. All the time, like driving about at night in the night, and traffic cars going about the place, and you would quite often get stopped, and there was like a much larger police presence, and that's the sort of thing you need. We need like a return to community policing, but the police force has probably been.
You can't call them force anymore. That's too aggressive. Police service.
The police service, well, it's probably
because they're providing a service.
I don't know how much it's been infected by wokery and diversity and all that. I honestly don't know. There are some fantastic guys out there, like the guys on the Metropolitan Police Crime Unit, Rick Wenham and his guys. I've spent the day with them, and the job they do is phenomenal. But these are just sort of small areas. Certain police forces seem to do nothing, and they'll do absolutely nothing about your load getting stolen, but they will gleefully hammer you for having ratchet straps that are like a little bit worn, or you've got a load of polystyrene packaging that isn't strapped in, even though it wouldn't make the slightest bit of difference. And then you get to,
I can't remember if I mentioned it on the last podcast with Torchy, did I say about my friend who had an incorrect corner protector in Germany?
I don't think you've mentioned that. No, as a German, so not like that.
No, so I shan't mention his name. I'm sure he wouldn't mind if I did, but he got pulled by the BAG in Germany. They originally wanted to fine him an awful lot of money because they couldn't read the tachograph in his DAF XG, to which he kind of politely pointed out, well, it's not my fault that you don't have the technology, so I'm not paying the fine, which went back and forth for quite some time. They obviously were then determined that, all right, we're not going to get him on that. We better get him on something. So they checked his load, and he had a very light pallet on the back with a strap over it. And when they looked into it, it had the wrong type of plastic to make a corner protector. And so they fined him €80 instead. And they told him that he should be strapping this pallet down with two ratchet straps, even though it weighed under 200 kilos. And it's worth worth quite a lot of money because it's quite valuable what was inside it. And as he pointed out, I'm not damaging it by putting another strap over it completely unnecessarily. So, the wrong type of plastic for a corner protector, which...
that's a stormer.
Very German.
That,
very German.
Yeah, so I was like, if the A34 is that rife, I feel like I kind of want to go and do some undercover investigation.
Why won't you go out? Why won't you at least investigate hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of stolen freight?
Yeah, this is what we want you to be doing. What is going on with all of that? There must be guys in the force that are frustrated with that sort of thing. But I don't know. I would like to go and look up and see what the numbers are, like how much things have been cut back, because you just don't see police. I mean, when I was even younger, when I used to be playing football at the park at night and things, you would literally see like the local Bobby like walking around and he would come over and sometimes like talk to you, and he knew you by name. He knew who you were, and we knew who he was, and everything. I mean, times have changed. I feel old thinking about that. That's just unthinkable now. But things were definitely better back then, I would say. So, yeah, I kind of feel like I want to go down the next time I'm in England, go and spend the sort of evening sort of lurking about the A34, driving up and down to see what's good.
But you'll get nicked.
Yeah, sorry. I'll go and stick in one of my orange beacons on the roof of the car and stick a high-vis jacket on. You can do whatever. It's stick highway maintenance sticker on the back and you can do whatever you want.
Yeah, very true.
Yeah. So now, just to finish things off on this podcast, we are fast approaching April Fool's Day, and a bit of like sort of hilarity and things. And I know that you had mentioned to me you were talking about tall tales, because yes. as lorry drivers, you know, we've all lorry drivers are an incredibly interesting and diverse group of people. You've got all sorts of different personality types as drivers, and you get some of them who are, they like a tall tale, and some of them are sort of, you know, compulsive liars. Some of them are kind of nice people, but so we would be interested to hear from you some of your tallest tales, some of the most outrageous untruths that you have heard in relation to adventures and lorries. You know, the sort of Jay Cartwright from the Inbetweeners stories about, oh yeah, I stopped and picked up these two Swedish lesbian hitchhikers, and then I ended up getting it on with them all night in the cab, and it was amazing, and everyone like that. Yeah, got pictures of them on my phone. It's like, all right, can we see the pictures? It's like, no.
Yeah. Now, this came about my old mate Jim Barker again. We were chatting on the CB app that I mentioned, and I can't remember how it came up, but he sort of said about it. He was there, he heard this, and he's got a witness to it. But to cut his story short, because I don't want to get it kind of wrong, he was on the train heading out to France, and he was chatting to a chap from down his way, and the subject came up of line fishing, and, you know, because you live nearby, do you want to go out fishing one day, blah, blah, blah. And this chap, who was nothing to do with the conversation, sat like across the carriage, sort of leant in and said, oh, don't talk to me about fishing. And so Jim said, well, I wasn't, you know, you're butting in on our conversation. And then, which obviously this chap saw as his way of just telling everybody his story. And he was working for a company called Nadexco, which quite a few people might recognise that name. It was a Dutch fridge company that went sort of bankrupt rather suddenly, but they had an awful lot of English drivers. Anyway, he was going on about how, you know, they're running night and day and doing this and that and blah, 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 and waffle, waffle. And he had gone to, I think he said, Immingham to pick a trailer up. And he picked this trailer up out of Immingham and off he went, and he thought it was a bit strange and it was handling a bit odd. And so he stopped. Couldn't even get into a lay-by because it was handling that weirdly. And he got out and he went round the back and he cracked the doors and a bit of water came out. And when he sort of managed to peek his head in, he had a 10-foot shark thrashing about in this trailer. Now, I could probably spend another hour just pulling this apart from a diving point of view and so on and so forth. But it just got us wondering as well, do these people actually think that you believe them? And why are they even bothering with such outlandish nonsense? You know, it's, if it was been a bit of a tall tale kind of, you know, an element of truth in it somewhere, but this is just ridiculous. So yeah, what nonsense have you heard from other drivers who are trying to palm it off as being true?
Yeah, so some interesting stories to come out of that. You hear stories about people getting fined for fined per turn of the landing legs.
Oh, yeah, that's another good one. Yeah, or £50 a turn on them, yeah. And the whole coning off in the RDC, the police were turned up and coned my truck off and marked the tyres, and I wasn't allowed to move because I told them I've got to have a break. That's another good one.
Yeah, that's quite a famous one, that, yeah.
So
I was thinking I'm going to do, I've been wanting to do this for a while. I was going to make a one-off sort of magazine for April Fools, and it's going to be called Total Twin Splitter.
Oh, brilliant. That sounds good.
It's aimed at those sort of particular
rose-tinted people.
Yeah. certain you know the guys
heading over shack with no night heater and no window and no clothes on, and it was
Yeah, and we're gonna go for some of that. I'm gonna put the cover together on it and put some details together on it, like why modern trucks Excellent. Are rubbish.
Yeah, we had it a lot harder. You don't know you're born.
Yeah,
et cetera. Yes.
Yeah, I'm getting.
I would go back to that truck in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
No, you wouldn't. No, you would not.
But what I was thinking was, I bet you. I wonder how many people I can take in with that, because it's almost sort of the thing that some people would like to buy. You know, yeah. I would potentially read it for a laugh myself, just to be.
Well, there you go. I mean, you've got at least an audience of one. That's got to be worth publishing.
Yeah, but do you think Total Twin Splitter's got some?
I think it's got traction.
Got some traction in it. Yeah,
it's got some traction in it.
I was thinking.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely.
So look out for that. That's going to be coming up soon, courtesy of Trucking Driver Publications here. But we'll kind of wrap this one up now, unless you've got anything else you wanted to mention.
No, that's it for now. Thanks, mate.
This month. Cool. Fantastic.
Yeah.
I am going to... Well, I'm now busy. I've got a whole load of stuff to do, putting this next magazine together and organising photo shoots. Again, folks, if you want to see your fleet, you want to see your truck in the magazine, please do get in touch with us through the usual channels, because we are looking for new feature material, and that goes for everything from the shiniest new V8s and all that, right through to hard-working, honest grafters that have got a million clicks on them. We want to see all of it, please. And yes, that kind of signs this one off. Oh, and please do remember to click the TomTom link on this podcast if you haven't done so, because you're getting 1 month free on their truck sat-nav right now, which, apart from anything else, if you don't have any sat-nav to hand and you're stuck and you're needing a bit of a truck-related advice, you can get that for free right now on Android and iPhone. Right, thanks very much, Matt. Been good to catch
thanks
up
a lot,
with you.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.
Yes, catch sir. Up with you again soon. Cheers.
Yes, cheers. See ya.
Thank you for tuning in to the Truckin' Driver podcast, proudly sponsored by TomTom. As a special thanks to our listeners for trucking through the holiday season, we're giving away 1 month free of TomTom Go Navigation Truck. Simply download the Go Navigation app and use the code TRUCKYEAH. That's TRUCKYEAH. When subscribing. Safe travels, folks.